Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Contract negotiation talk is right up there with debating the merit of the DH, talking about AstroTurf as topics. Contract situations are right next to, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? In the Hall of Fame of awful topics. And that's the case for a number of reasons. Number one, it's people arguing about money. It's billionaires arguing with millionaires about money. Right? Nobody wants to hear that. Secondly, we all know how it's going to end, especially in the NFL and in the case of an elite player. That player is going to end up being paid at or near the top of that player's position. In the meantime, everybody's going to ask and question his loyalty and ask other stupid questions like, are they actually better off without him? Are they a better team without him? And then that'll get mixed in with reports of the player working out in some remote location, saying that he's in the best shape of his life. The whole thing is so tired. It is so played. It is so boring. You just want to fast forward to the part where they sign the contract and the player shows up. So, I say that because the Cowboys were going to have three different contract situations on their hands. Felt like the most boring thing ever. Times three, right? Except amazingly, it hasn't been. And it hasn't been thanks to one Gerald Wayne Jones. Because Gerald's been making some seriously weird statements, even for weird Gerald. There was the one about severed hands that freaked everybody out. And then there was the one, that absolute zinger about Ezekiel Elliott that pretty much slayed everybody in the world.
Is Pollard your best negotiator with Zeke?
Who?
Pollard.
Yeah. Zeke who?
He went there. Zeke who? Yeah, but see, the thing is, now we are slightly more than a week away from the start of the season. And for that reason, it's time for Gerald to shelf that Chuckle Hut bullcrap. It's no longer open mic night at Flappers, Gerald. It's time to get down to business. With the season opener against the Giants coming up a week from Sunday, it is time to roll up the sleeves and inject whatever it is you're shooting into your face. Let's get this deal done. Or not. Because this is what Gerald told a Dallas radio station.
Listen, we've got a marathon here. And we want Zeke when we get to the playoffs. We want Zeke when we're in the dog days of this season. And so fresh Zeke as we got on into the end of the season would be great.
It's 105.3, The Fan. If I didn't know any better, I'd say that sounds like a random Cowboys fan calling into a sports radio program, not the Cowboys CEO and GM, because that's how whack that take is. Like, you know what would be good? Having Ezekiel Elliott as the running back on our team for an entire season. But do you know what would be even better than that? Having Ezekiel Elliott as the running back on our team for only a couple of games. I mean, it sounds like some random drunk just riffing on a stool at a bar. Not a guy who owns and runs arguably the most famous football team ever. Hey, you know what would be really sick? I'll tell you, it would be great if Ezekiel Elliott didn't play at all this season and then was so fresh and so ready that he ran right out of the tunnel onto the field before the start of the Super Bowl and we won the Super Bowl. Man, that'd be great. That'd be the best thing ever. No, wait. No, it wouldn't. This is even better than that. Do you know what's better than the best thing ever? What's better than the best thing ever is this guy doesn't play at all in 2021. Then he would be so fresh. If he takes 2 years off, he'd be fresh as bleep. And then what happens? What happens if the team misses the playoffs without him? What then? Well, I guess he'll be really fresh for OTAs. Hey, look, I know Jerry doesn't want to be backed into a corner in this situation. He doesn't want the pressure of the season opener to force his hand. He doesn't want that player to have any leverage at all. And he's looking at the schedule. What does he see? The team opens up with New York, Washington, and Miami. You know, Jarrah, He's already got them going 3-0. He's not worried about any of those games, and I understand that. Never mind that it's a hell of a slap in the face to all three of those teams, and he could not be disrespecting them any more than he is by saying what he's saying about Elliott. He's telling those three teams, we've already assumed W's against you or the backup running back. And we're going to go with a backup, not because of injury, but because we don't want to pay our star. And more importantly, because, well, why does anybody do anything? Because they can. And we know we can beat you with RB2. And that we will beat you with RB2. And while you may not see an actual quote where he says that, that's exactly what he's saying. And more importantly, that's exactly what they're hearing in New York, Washington, and Miami. Meanwhile, Zeke's working out in Cabo with Marshall Faulk, whatever the hell that means. And his teammates are not sweating it because it's never cool to talk about another man's money. And his right guard, Zach Martin, says he will block for whoever is out there.
Listen, we're preparing for the season and... You know, we're going to have to play with what we got, and what we got is a damn good back in Tony Pollard. So, you know, obviously you'd want him out here, but we're preparing to get ready for week one.
Rest a note, that does not feel like a swipe at Elliott. That's just one of the best offensive linemen in the game saying the season's going to start and I'm going to block for whoever's in the backfield. Yeah, but how about this? What if Tony Pollard is not the guy they think he is? There have been lots of running backs who look great in the preseason and never amounted to jack in the regular season. What then? How much more leverage have you given Elliott? Then again, does that leverage even matter? Here's a more important question. Does the regular season even matter? I mean, I thought the whole point of the NFL was every game mattered. If that's the case, why is Jerry just wiping out the first month or two? We don't need our best running back. We're good. Great, Jera. All right, you don't need your best running back. Why don't you just sit your quarterback, too, while you're at it? If you don't need your best running back because you want to keep him fresh, why don't you sit Dak? The only thing better than a fresh Elliott would be a fresh Elliott and a fresh Dak. And here's the whole absolutely idiotic part of the whole thing. The Cowboys and Elliott probably both know what he's going to sign for. They know where the market is for elite running backs. He's an elite running back. So, if they don't know the exact number, down to the penny, both sides probably know, within a small margin of error, what he's going to sign for. But instead of just doing the deal, a deal that they already know, they'll do this bizarre theater where Elliott works out somewhere, Jerry makes a joke about the backup running back, Elliott and his camp pretend to be upset about that joke, and the rest of us have to sit through all this nonsense when they already know it's going to get done and what the number is going to be. He is Dennis Dodd. Dennis, what's going on? How are you?
Tim, go Badgers. I am great.
Appreciate that, too. All right, so there were a couple of games last weekend, but the college football season gets underway in earnest this weekend. Dennis, let's get this out of the way first. Can we just skip the entire season and go right to another Clemson-Alabama rematch, or do you see it playing out differently this year?
I think Alabama and Clemson are going to be in the playoff, and, you know, it would probably meet either in the semifinal or final, obviously, but they've clearly separated themselves from the pack. Now, you know, the injury to Dylan Moses at linebacker Alabama this week, you know, throws a monkey in there, but I still think they're head and shoulders above, and I think Clemson is clearly the number one program in the country right now.
Dennis Dodd, my guest. I'm going to follow you up on that in a minute, but let's go back to Dylan Moses. It was announced that he suffered what expects to be a season-ending injury on Tuesday. The thinking, Dennis, for years has been that Alabama is so deep that their second string can beat most teams' first string. But break this down. How big of a loss is that for Nick Saban?
Well, there's two different views of this. And, you know, right now, you know, going into the opener against Duke, it's not a big deal. They're going to beat Duke. They're going to beat 9, 10, 11 teams on their schedule just because, oh, by the way, they may have the best offense in the country. They will be able to outscore teams despite any defensive deficiencies they have. The concern is you've still got to play A&M. You've still got to play Georgia, theoretically, in the SEC championship game. We just talked about Clemson. And this is an Alabama defense that very quietly is coming off its worst performance since Nick's first year in 2007. Alabama was 16th total defense. Sounds good, but the worst since 2007. Now Dylan Moses is out for the year, and you're starting two true freshmen at linebacker. You know, so you go from Dylan Moses, a guy who was a consensus preseason All-American, to Shane Lee, who's the next guy on the depth chart, who's never taken a snap in college. Now, again, it's not going to matter against Duke, but at some point it is, and that's a key position on the field. Shane Lee is a four-star out of Baltimore. He runs a 4.7, which according to, I guess, the recruiting people, is the best at his position in the country. But I don't know what any of that means when Trevor Lawrence is, you know, throwing a crossing pattern.
Listen, everybody already knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get in a crash. People could get hurt or even killed. But let's take a moment and look at some pretty surprising stats. Nearly 29 people in the U.S. die every day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Many people are unaware that driving while high can be just as dangerous. In 2015, for instance, 42% of drivers killed in crashes tested positive for drugs. So not so harmless after all, is it? Get this. From 07 to 2015, marijuana use among drivers killed in crashes doubled. The truth is, driving while high is deadly. Stop kidding yourselves. If you're impaired from alcohol or drugs, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Drive sober or get pulled over. Dennis Dodd is joining us. All right, then. Go back to the other point that you made. Dennis, for a while, Alabama was held up as the gold standard and the model by which every program was measured. Has Clemson ripped that mantle from them?
Right now, in this moment, yes. I did a piece that was up yesterday. I went out to Clemson in the off season and just wanted to, what does it mean to be number one? Just the unmitigated joy of being Clemson. And they've got things so wired right now. One of the biggest points I make is they just plucked, for the 2020 class, I think, the best quarterback on the West Coast from California. Not only did they get him, my question is, when was the last time Clemson signed anyone from California? And that's just one example. You know, they've got Trevor Lawrence, who could probably play in the NFL right now. Travis Etienne, a preseason All-American. The defensive line is gone. All of them are in the NFL right now. And I don't know if they drop off that much. And Dabo's just recruiting like a madman. So right now, yes, they have the best program in the country. How that plays out, I think we'll have to wait till the playoffs.
Dennis Dodd is joining us once again. All right, so back to Alabama, Dennis, for a minute. What do you think that Nick Saban thinks when he looks back on last season, and in particular, that beatdown at the hands of Clemson?
Well, it's right now it's motivation to get back. But it, as I wrote that night, you know, look, it was significant. It was the worst loss of the Nick Saban era at Alabama. Trevor Lawrence and company shredded a secondary that was just not up to the task. I think for Alabama's case, they obviously need to get better. The standard is Clemson. And, you know, Nick said in the offseason, you know, motivation can be a good thing if you handle it right. You know, they've had 10-win seasons where he disparaged the team because they didn't win the championship. Everybody wasn't focused. There was a little of that last year. And I asked him at SEC Media Day, I had him on camera, and I finally said, does Clemson deserve credit for any of this? You know, agents were around the program. They're not focused. And he said, oh, yeah, as soon as they got Trevor Lawrence, things seemed to change for him. And part of me wanted to say, you think? So, you know, we'll see. Alabama's very, very good. Nick is just as dedicated. But cracks are starting to show. You know, they've had these injuries now. Can you get over that at linebacker? The secondary, I think, is better because of the year's experience. They're very good in the offensive line. And Tua, again, if he's not the best player in the country, he might be number two. So they set up pretty well.
We're talking to Dennis Dodd for a few more moments. All right, so there's some interesting matchups this weekend. None more so, Dennis, than Oregon taking on Auburn Saturday in Texas. How important is that game, not just for Oregon, but for the entire Pac-12?
It's huge for both sides. For Oregon, look, they understand the mantle that they have now. They're really playing for the Pac-12 right now early in the season. It became very easy to dismiss the Pac-12 last year when they lost their opener on a neutral field in a close game to Auburn. but it became very easy for the national media to just forget about the Pac-12 at that point. Same with Oregon. Now, Utah plays BYU tonight in a big rivalry game, and a lot of people think Utah or Oregon are going to win the league, so that's in play. But, you know, I don't know if Mario Cristobal is thinking about that at all, but they just want to get the program, keep the program on track. But look, you have a situation where the Pac-12, before it starts entertaining thoughts about being in the playoff, has to get a dominant team. They have to get a 12-1 team that competes for those top four. Jim, in the last 2 years, that's 24 chances for their teams. They've had one finish the season with less than three losses, and that was Washington State last year at 11-2. So they have to get that dominant team.
We are talking to Dennis Dodds. Dennis, also another good matchup this weekend. You've got Jalen Hurts in Oklahoma opening up against Houston Sunday. What about that fit? How do you like that fit for Hurts and for Oklahoma?
Well, that's the biggest question going into the game, Jim, and I'm in Oklahoma right now previewing the game. I think the biggest question is, what kind of thrower is Jalen Hurts? I mean, he has a ring at Alabama, SEC Freshman of the Year, we know that, but lost the job, you know, because of Tua. And he's coming into Oklahoma replacing consecutive Heisman Mayfield and Kyler Murray. I just looked it up. Combined, the last 2 years completed 70% of their passes in an 8-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Jalen Hurts was merely, quote unquote, a 63% passer and 4-1 ratio at Alabama. I think it all revolves around him. They're going to have one of the best tandems at running back. And Trey Sermon and Kennedy Brooks. The defense can't be any worse because it was horrible last year. They allowed the most passing yards in the country. So I think under Alex Grinch, the new coordinator, they'll be better. But I think it all revolves around Jalen Hurts, so we'll see.
You know, to your point also, the last two quarterbacks at Oklahoma have won the last two Heisman trophies.
Yep.
And they've done it in Lincoln Riley's first and second year as a head coach. And that tells you all you need to know about this guy. He is brilliant. He is a brilliant, brilliant coach. Listen, one last thought, Dennis, before you go. You covered Andrew Luck when he was at Stanford. How would you describe him to somebody who has never met him?
Cerebral, talented, an extension of his father, Oliver, who was like that as a person, as an administrator, and as an athlete. As I tweeted this week, I have, look, absolutely nothing bad to say about him retiring. Anybody who's played sports, either professionally or as an amateur, knows that cycle of when you get hurt, rehab, get hurt again, go through that. I totally sympathize with him, and he's got nothing to prove to anyone, and shame on those Colts fans who booed him. I tweeted, I assume that those who booed were equally under 30, were paid more money, and had never been injured before. I can only assume those are the people booing, because anybody else doesn't have a leg to stand on. He had a great career. And I think, frankly, Jim, we're going to see more of this. I mean, it's not big, bad football, but it is football. And look, it's bigger, faster, stronger. 30 years ago, we never talked about guys dying playing football. Now, it's a scourge in the amateur ranks in high school and college. They've got to get rid of that. And it's going to happen someday again in pro football. So football is not bad, but neither is Andrew Luck.
100%, and we will be seeing more of this and talking more about this. Dennis, we have not spoken since your beloved St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup. Were you able to get a day with the Cup? And how did you celebrate?
Yeah, I did not get a day with the Cup. I did cover Game 4, so that was a treat. That was the one they won 4-2 to even the series 2-2. But the city that's first in brews finally got something to put in the cup to drink it. So it was waited 49 years. Wait, was it 49 years since the 1970 finals to get back in, and then finally won the Cup. I can. What was the sign at the 94 finals with the New York Rangers? I can die in peace now.
He's a national college football writer for CBSSports.com, a very good friend of the program, too, Dennis Dodd. Well done, Dennis. Have a great weekend, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Jim, thanks so much.
Sign up and be an O Rewards member today and earn 1 point for every dollar you spend. Receive your rewards twice as fast and on the go when you provide your email address. O Reward members get $5 back for every $150 they spend. It's fast, it's easy, it's free. It's only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store or orewards.com for details. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Now, stop me if you've heard this before, but BJ Penn was in a fight outside an establishment. No, actually, don't stop me. Stop BJ Penn, because this stuff really has to stop. Now, it's been a while about Penn on this show, but it has not been that long since Penn's name came up on the show. Daniel Cormier mentioned him just a few weeks back.
Think about this, Jim. BJ Penn, right? BJ Penn was the man, like the absolute man. He's lost 8 fights in a row now. 8 fights in a row. You know, and it don't make you forget the things that he did prior, but it's like, you know, like he's losing the guys that didn't have a chance against him prior. You know, it's like, I think your legacy has to mean more to you, and you should leave it intact whenever you get out.
That was so interesting. I mean, that's Daniel Cormier, so you know he's not swerving out of his lane to take a run at somebody. When I said to Daniel Cormier, how much longer do you want to do it? Might this be your last fight? He said, legacy is really important to me. Legacy is really important to me. As an example, think about BJ Penn. He's lost 8 fights in a row. Guys that he has no business losing to. Guys that he would have dominated back in the day. Actually, at the time that Cormier and I spoke, Penn had lost 7 fights in a row. But the number is now 8. And I'll get to the scorecards for his latest fight in a moment. But first, allow me to set the stage. According to reports, BJ Penn was at the Lava Shack. And that was Tuesday night. While I have never been to the Lava Shack, I have to imagine that that's the kind of place where if you go there, you have to know the hot takes are going to be flowing. It is the Lava Shack. And if dudes are opening up their pie holes and molten lava is pouring out generously, somebody's face is about to get broken. And as you might imagine, if somebody's face is about to get broken at the Lava Shack, TMZ somehow, some way has video. Actually, videos of that very thing happening. And they did. And one of those videos looks bad. Like really, really bad. In one video, the one that TMZ says took place first, Penn is grappling, sort of, with this flabby, shirtless guy in camo shorts. He then tells that guy, punch me again. Punch me again. So the guy does. He hits him with a 1-2 combo, and it drops Penn. The portly guy, the somewhat fat guy, hit him on the 1-2. That's one of the absolute legends of MMA, lying on his back after getting dropped by a fat man in camo shorts. A fat man who landed a really good left hand. A fat man with a really good 1-2 combo that sounded like this. But a fat man nonetheless. After he drops Penn, the shirtless guy does exactly what you're supposed to do in that situation. Returns to the neutral corner and waits for the ref to pick up the count or stop the fight. But you could tell how hyped he was. You could tell how hyped this guy was to put the former champ on his back. The guy looked like he was about to start climbing up the side of the cage to celebrate or run up the ropes a la Sugar Ray Leonard after a big win. Now, do not come in here and tell me that it's not Penn's fault. He was fighting out of his weight class. Yeah, I know he did a lot of work in the lower weight classes. I know that, for instance, Conor McGregor would never be asked to fight Daniel Cormier. But it's neither here nor there. That's not the point at all. The point is, if you're a legend like BJ Penn, you cannot be out fighting randos in public. And you certainly can't tell them to punch you and then get knocked the hell out by them. Again, I don't know what happened. I don't know what led up to Penn being floored by a shirtless man. I don't know what led up to Penn taking a 1-2 combo. I don't know what happened. A rep for Penn released a statement which read, quote, upon meeting friends for a concert at the Lava Shack, words were exchanged between BJ and the acquaintance. From witness accounts, BJ tried multiple times to defuse the situation, but was hit repeatedly and knocked to the ground as seen on the video, end quote. I don't know. Like, what I saw in the video was Penn diffusing the situation by getting that guy's fist fused to his face. And it sounded like this. Nothing got diffused there. And his head nearly got detached. Now, I know that somebody allegedly close to Penn told TMZ that the guy had been egging Penn on all night. Quote, "This guy is notorious for taunting BJ," end quote. Again, no excuse. You can't get hooked like that. If this guy really is, quote, notorious for taunting BJ, all the more reason to stay away or to not go out at all, because this is not the first time this summer that Penn has been involved in an incident at a club or a bar. And if you can't go out without getting into a fight, if you can't go out without getting hooked by some rando, here's an idea. Don't go out, especially if you know you're going to run into somebody who's got absolutely nothing to lose, everything to gain, and is looking to hook you. You know how many MMAers that I've spoken to who say they're constantly bumping up against that one a-hole in a bar after drinks who's fueled up on liquor courage and wants to test them? You know how many MMAers I've spoken to who tell me that story? Pretty much all of them. And if your response is, hey, Rome, what are we supposed to do? Just stay home? Never go out? Yes, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. Just stay home and never go out if you can't go out without getting hooked by some random. I mean, there are a ton of bad looks in that video. Being fat and shirtless in camo shorts, never a good look. But not nearly as bad as being dropped by a guy who's fat and shirtless and in camo shorts. And especially if you're a former champ. We're talking about a guy who beat Matt Serra, who beat Matt Hughes, who went up against GSP, and he's getting dropped by a chunky dude in camo shorts without a shirt. You know what's worse than fighting for no good reason and not getting paid for it? Fighting for no good reason, not getting paid for it, and getting knocked out, and having somebody capture the whole thing on their phone. And while he clearly lost that fight, taking him to 8 straight losses, and yes, if BJ is going to continue to fight for the viewing public, I am going to continue to update his record. So that counts. That goes in as a loss. As bad as that loss looks, I'm not sure the next video is any better. In fact, it's worse, because in the next video, Penn is lying on top of the shirtless man inside the shack and wailing away. And according to one report, a source close to the dude in the camo shorts says that BJ sucker punched him before he tackled him, got on top, and started landing punches. Again, this is a UFC Hall of Famer smashing some shirtless guy at a bar while patrons scream and inner circle sweat plays in the background. It's one hell of a scene and a horrible look for a legend in the cage. I mean, it's one thing to be breaking records for UFC lightweight title defenses in a cage. Quite another to be beating up on an out-of-shape dude at a bar while early 90s reggae fusion plays in the background. As always, with a situation like this, it's impossible to really know what's going on. We don't know what happened before the cameras were turned on, what happened between the first video and the second, but it's all terrible. I really don't know what did or did not happen that night at the Lava Shack, but I don't need to know what happened to know that that can't happen. You simply cannot be doing that. And as time has gone by, we've learned more about BJ Penn outside the cage, and what we've learned is not good. There was the alleged fight with a bouncer earlier this summer. There was the allegation that he threatened a farmer with a machete, a restraining order filed against him by his wife, allegations of physical, sexual, and emotional abuse. He's lost 7 fights in a row, and that makes 8. My man, get some help. He is Willie McGinnis. Willie, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How you been, man?
Good, good. Willie, it's good to hear your voice as always. Thanks so much. Willie, let's jump into it. The biggest story in the NFL for the past week, of course, Andrew Luck announcing his retirement. What was your reaction when you first heard that story?
Well, I think like a lot of people, I was surprised because of the timing, and I didn't know he was contemplating retirement. But, you know, after I heard him speak and I know what he was probably going through, and, you know, the one thing that we all care about, you know, is our future and, you know, our health. That's depending on, you know, where you're working, whether it's the NFL or somewhere else. And I think that people forget how hard it is to get to Sunday and play at a high level, whether it's through injury, whether it's through just game planning, everything that goes into it, how hard it is, or they don't even know for that matter if they've never done it. So for somebody that's been, fighting with injuries for the last 4 years, and you heard him talk about injury, pain, rehab, and his mental state and where he's been, I commend him for it, and I don't have any issues with it, and I don't think there was any ill will behind it. I just think that he had to do what was best for him.
I agree with everything you just said, Willie. I have no issue with this whatsoever, and I also agree with the statement that none of us know what it's like. None of us have walked in your shoes, his shoes. In fact, can you take a minute and lay that out? When he talks about that endless cycle of injury and rehab and having to go through that year after year, exactly what is that like?
Yeah, it's tough, man, especially when you have major injuries. So it wasn't like, you know, he was having small injuries. These were major injuries. When you talk about punctured lungs and torn labrum in the shoulder and ACL and all those different things, those are major injuries that, you know, when people go in and cut on your body, it changes things, you know, not just physically but mentally. And, you know, the fact that you're a competitor and you want to be out there for your teammates, you want to be out there for your team, and sometimes we do sacrifice our bodies. I've done it, you know, many times. A lot of other players across the league, past and present, have done that. And sometimes you get to a point, especially after 7 years in the last 4 years, you've been going through that same cycle. It wears on you mentally. And for some people, they don't understand. It takes you to different places. Some players or people get addicted, you know, to painkillers and other things start to happen based on what you're trying to do to put yourself in position to play. And that's not all. So I just think that, you know, he's a bright young man. He has a lot going on for himself. Football was a part of his life. It wasn't his entire life. And he made a conscious decision, like other players have in the past, to walk away from the game. There's nothing, you know, negative or wrong about the game. It's just sometimes people have to find that point in their life where they have to make certain decisions. And I think he had to do that.
When you lay it out like that, Willie, I don't know who could possibly take exception to what you just said. Willie McGinnis is joining us. So the Colts have a lot of confidence in Jacoby Brissett. So when you consider, Willie, the talent they have in front of him, the talent they have on defense, how do they stack up with the rest of the AFC South? In other words, could you make the argument that they're still the team to beat in the division?
I do, Jim. I agree with you 100%. I think when Jacoby Brissett took over the team in 2017, when Andrew Luck was out for the entire season, it was a totally different team. The O-line is totally different. They're way better now. They're one of the best offensive lines in the league. They got more talent on the outside at the tight end position. The receivers, the running back game is stronger. The defense is much better. So this is a totally different team than what we've seen in the past when Jacoby Brissett has taken over. He's a solid quarterback. He's smart. He's played behind, in my opinion, two of the best quarterbacks to ever do it, and Tom Brady for one, of course, and playing behind Andrew Luck. He's learned from some of the best coaches. He still has some of the best coaches in the league and management in his corner right now. So I think a lot of people are underestimating. I know it's not Andrew Luck, and I know he was the franchise guy, but you still have a really solid quarterback that a team can rally behind, and that I think he can get a lot of wins. And I think you mentioned the AFC South. I still think that they're the favorite team based on, you know, their team from top to bottom. They're still the favorite in that division.
NFL Network analyst Willie McGinnis joining us, also a three-time Super Bowl champ. Willie, you mentioned the Patriots. They're coming off another Super Bowl win, of course. Now, Rob Gronkowski's not there. Brian Flores is not there. The list goes on. You were with the Patriots a few weeks back. What was your sense as to the mood around that team?
Well, I think the team, you know, defensively, I think they've gotten better. They've taken a step, you know, in the right direction, I think. In talking to coaches and the players, they're very optimistic. I think they're more versatile on defense. They can do a lot more because of the personnel the linebackers that they have, you know, now that's played that a veteran got multiple positions, they can do more defensively. So I think we'll see that this year, them being more flexible in their game planning and the systems that they can run. Offensively, I know there's no Rob Gronkowski. If you talk about Jim, a team that's always prepared no matter what happens when it comes to injuries or, you know, even at the quarterback position, them being prepared and ready to play, this team will be prepared and be ready to go. We don't know if Gronk is fully retired yet. We heard him talk. He talked about don't, you know, it's not off the shelf yet. So, you know, I said it when he first, you know, decided to retire that it's a possibility he may come back. I think that's still very, very real. We'll see what happens there. But they've got other players. Edelman is there. You know, Kearney, they got other receivers and, you know, other players. They got a slew of running backs on that team. Of course, they still got Tom Brady and a good offensive line. So I think they'll find ways to win. This team is still solid. They're still good. Still the team to beat in the AFC.
Willie McGinnis, my guest, and of course, I still have the guy on top dialing it all up. Earlier this summer, Willie, you told that great story about how you first met Bill Belichick. It was a conversation that took place back at USC in the day. For those who do not know the story, Willie, what was that first meeting like with Belichick, and what was your takeaway from it?
Man, I was sitting there, and I was like, first of all, you know, he coached one of my favorite players ever, Lawrence Taylor. So we're sitting in the USC Inheritance Hall. He was with the Cleveland Browns at the time, and I think they had the 9th overall pick. And just the wealth of knowledge that this man not only had about the game, how he would utilize me as a player in their system, but my past. Some of the things that I went through, some of the things that I encountered in my college, high school, and even, you know, in my youth years. Very knowledgeable. They did a wealth of, you know, a lot of different, they did a lot of background checks, and he just knew me inside out. And talking to this guy, I was like, he's not only calculated, he definitely knows the game, but this is somebody who knows what he needs, knows what he wants, knows the type of player, talked character. We talked everything. I was just really, really impressed with Bill Belichick back then. And, you know, I didn't know where I was going to go in the draft, but I did, you know, I did have that conversation with, if I was around, hopefully I would be a top 10 guy. That could be one of the landing spots I could end up. And I was really, really comfortable in going to play for him if that's where I was going to be drafted.
NFL Network analyst William McGinnis joining us, sharing his thoughts. Will, you mentioned LT, Lawrence Taylor. I mean, it's a different time. It's a different game. It's all different right now. But why was he your guy when you were coming up? And have you ever seen another player like LT?
No, I think LT's in the class of his own. You know, he was my favorite linebacker, along with Andre Tippett, Derek. Derek Thomas, he was another one of my guys that I watched. That was just, you know, some of the best to ever do it. LT, man, when you talk about size, speed, explosiveness, tenacity, the right attitude, a guy that could do everything, change the complexion of a game. Offenses have to change when he lines up on the other side of the ball. I think he just encompasses every single thing. And, you know, when you're a linebacker and you're big, I was 255 coming out of SC, you know that, but I played at 265, so I was kind of a tweener, an elephant, DN / outside linebacker, kind of fit his mold. So I watched guys like him, guys like Tippett, guys like Derek Thomas that played my position that, you know, and learned from them and stole things and had an opportunity to meet all of them and spend time with him, Charles Haley too, for that matter, and just to pick little things up. So I was a fan of the game. I was a fan of the position. I knew coming out of SC, I wanted to emulate those guys and what they did at the NFL level.
It seems to me, Willie, and what would I know? I'm just a media guy on the outside looking in, but I think it takes a very different dude to even step on that field even once, much less play at that high level for a long period. I think that Charles Haley, I don't know him really well, but I would suggest that that's kind of a different guy. But man, what an unbelievable player. What an unbelievable talent. What separated Charles Haley from everybody else?
I think Charles Haley, man, first of all, you gotta have the mental state of mind that you're going to kick whoever's ass that lines up in front of you. And I think, you know, when Pete Carroll brought him to meet me when he was the coach with the Patriots, because I was playing that elephant position, which was Charles Haley's position, you know, he talked about pass rush. He talked about having the right mentality, setting moves up, understanding how to use your length, you know, your arm length and how, you know, offensive linemen, they want to eliminate the space between you and you have to create space. Like, talking the game within the game, just learning those small nuances and, you know, getting off the ball, like a couple things. You can't learn everything in a meeting when you meet a guy like that. So he identified like a couple things just to start with and to build from and go from there. And when you've had that much success for that many years with multiple teams and you've won that many Super Bowls, you know, as a young kid, why wouldn't you listen to him, you know?
Willie McGinnis, absolutely. Listen, last thought, I could talk to you about a million different things, but I saw you tweet, Willie, this picture the other day of some amazing Long Beach Poly gear made by Jordan. I have to know, is that a Photoshop or are those unis for real?
No, it is for real, man. We used to be with Nike a long time ago. And, you know, Nike, U.S. Nike football has done a great job at promoting it and coming back home, man. We felt like that we're trying to rebuild our program at Long Beach Poly. You know, we've had a lot of great athletes over the years come out of Poly and represent the school at a high level. One of the schools with the most players in the NFL out of that school, and Nike recognizes that. Nike is, you know, the top echelon when it comes to gear, performance, playing at a high level, and definitely looking good. And, you know, we wanted that partnership. We wanted to get back to that level. And not only me, but the head coach and the players and the community, we thought it'd be great to get back on board, man, and get back to where we needed to be. And they're also ingrained in the community. Our youth football program, we wear Nike. Our kids are in Nike. And when I play, you know, I wore Nike for 15 years. So I know about, you know, the gear, the equipment, the way it looks. And, you know, us as players, man, we got to feel good. We got to look good. But we also got to be protected to play our best and to play at a high level. So it's a special deal that we have with about 10 other schools in the country. And, you know, we're lucky to be able to be in position to do that. And I was just happy to blast that out. So Long Beach Poly is a Nike/Jordan school now. And we're getting back to excellence, man. We're building.
It's a powerhouse, Long Beach Poly. He's an NFL Network analyst, 3-time Super Bowl champ, 15-year NFL vet, friend of the program. You can follow him on Twitter at Willie McGinnis. Willie, I appreciate you very, very much. So good to have you back on the show. Willie, thank you.
Always, Jim. You're the best, man, anytime.
It's a new season. Antonio Brown is on the Raiders. Le'Veon Bell is with the Jets. Odell Beckham is in Cleveland. Andrew Luck and Gronk are retired. Now, the one thing that has not changed, where I'm putting my money down on all the games. My bookie is the place to bet on football every weekend. My bookie has better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sports book, period. This year, they're hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place is guaranteed to win at least 100 grand, and it only costs 100 bucks to enter. All you have to do is pick 5 NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of that huge cash prize pool. Listen, I would only recommend a service to you that's been good to me. That's why MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, they pay. MyBookie also has live in-game betting on every single NFL game. They've got the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player is going to score each game. And right now, you can get up to $1,000 in a first deposit bonus. You can double your first deposit. Use the promo code ROME to activate that amazing offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when you create the account so you can get that bonus. Bet, win, get paid. MyBookie. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. What's going on? Nice to be back. Felt like I was gone a long time, but
just one day.
I was in Lubbock, Texas. Went to see Chris Beard. Now, because I was not here, I have not had a chance to get into Andrew Luck in that situation.
Yeah! I'm stuck in this process. I haven't been able to live the life I want to live.
A lot of you have had your takes, your hot takes, your molten lava takes flying around. Frank Gore says you're a tough mother. You're a tough mother.
Mother scratcher.
Lots to cover with Charles Robinson.
How did you absorb Andrew Luck's retirement? Where were you and what went through your head?
Hey, man, I'm doing this interview. I was in Lubbock, Texas.
I didn't believe it. WTF.
What a horrible look. How about instead of booing this guy, you thank this guy? How about a tip of the cap and some recognition of the physical and mental pain that he's had to endure?
Go pound sand, you loser.
Email.
Dear Van Smack, I can't believe Andrew Luck quit. What's he going to do now? Work in city government? Sign Robert Dasmati? Yeah, Robert Dasmati quitting this job a few months in is almost exactly like Andrew Luck.
I don't see why anyone's surprised that he wants to act like a reasonable modern human being. And I want to,
in contrast, but not in quality.
Ross Tucker is joining us.
So before every game, I was taking 2 Loratabs, 2 Flexerols, a shot of Toradol in my butt. My wife had to tie my shoes in the morning when I left the house.
Lauren, what's up?
I love the Barry Sanders take, and I just want to say it was awesome, dude.
Lauren, are you trying to call somebody while at the same time talk to me on the air? Because that won't work.
No, my cheek hit the 2 button. So they're kind of funny, but they're...
Time to die, Lauren.
How do you do her like that, Alvin?
My cheek hit the buzzer. Joined by Paul Chryst.
There's going to be talk, you know, each year on what this team could be or should be. And all that matters is who are you, really? If we can be in that moment, you got your best chance to maximize it and just try to make the most of those moments.
I didn't see that, but I don't really follow them, so...
You don't follow them, what, in life or on InstaChat?
InstaChat.
Did you unfollow them on Snapface?
Snapface.
Just do what you always do, Hood, man. Say nothing.
Yeah, I sound that. I wish him the best of luck.
What do you think about that?
I said he was a good player.
I took out 200 milliliters of blood.
Do not come back.
Later.
For who? For what? You're a 3-time Super Bowl champ who got to go out on his own terms. You listen to your body and your mind the first time. Keep listening to it now. I'm talking about Ice Cube bringing in Kawhi and Paul George. As you saw that whole thing unfold, what did you think?
They took the easy way out, and the Lakers is the hard road. If you don't want that pressure, you go to a place where you can cover them up. If they lose, they can say, hey, I'm on the Clippers. What you expect?
Judge Mills Lane was explaining to all of us that that was the answer to that question.
That's when you know what the answer to that question is.
Bruh, my friend Yvonne, who's the bartender.
Yvonne!
Wow, this is a lot bigger than I thought.
So what do you teach the military? I would imagine you teach them things that you cannot do in the cage.
Yeah, basically everything I teach the military is everything that's banned in the UFC, right? So headbutts, gouging the eyes, snapping the fingers, using weapons.
Like the fish hooking?
Fish hooking, absolutely.
Langston Galloway is my guest.
Toy Story was like the main thing. I was like, hey, look, I think this would take off and blow up and having Buzz and Woody on the shoe. I mean, that was amazing. And just a small touches that go into it.
How about them Cowboys?
And we won't zig when we get to the playoffs.
All right, you don't need your best running back. Why don't you just sit your quarterback, too, while you're at it? Why don't you sit Dak? The only thing better than a fresh Elliott would be a fresh Elliott and a fresh Dak. Dennis Dodd.
Waited 49 years. Was it 49 years, the 1970 finals, to get back in so I can die in peace now.
Penn is grappling with this flabby, shirtless guy in camo shorts. He hits him with a 1-2 combo, and it drops Penn. He's lost 7 fights in a row, and that makes 8. My man, get some help. I can't wait to find the 7-egg omelet jammed with sausage tree this weekend. Steven Seagal.
This plant-based diet is garbage.
Garbage!
I eat spaghetti
Karate.
With meat sauce, and I will take James Wilk to the bank. The food bank.
I don't watch sports. I play sports. Willie McGinnis, what separated Charles Haley from everybody else?
You got to have the mental state of mind
that you're going to kick whoever's ass that lines up in front of you.
Seth Luttrell is my guest. If all the head coaches in college football got into a brawl, who do you think would be the last man standing?
I must have had a lot of people fooled, one. And two, I'm glad I don't have to back up that article. I don't want to have to get in these brawls. There's some pretty tough coaches out there.
Triple I.
Relax, Roxanne.
Left in Laguna's hood.
Google's golf. Where my boy Cruz win the U.S. Nationals this weekend in Indy.
Quality Tree Mailer.
Jim, thank you always. Great question.
It's a conference of rectums.
I think this is where I now say good night now.
Good night now!
We are joined by Seth Luttrell. Seth, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, how you doing? It's awesome to be on. Appreciate you having me.
It's good to have you back, and I'm doing really, really well. So if we were to go back, Seth, to last year, you were coming off that 9-win season that stunned a lot of people outside the program because of the state of the team that you inherited. Now you're coming off a second straight 9-win season. You've got yourself a Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback. You're not surprising anybody anymore. How would you describe the mood around the program now as compared to the first few years there?
Well, I just think there's a lot of energy, a lot of momentum, you know, after the first couple of years. And, again, it comes down to we've been blessed with great coaches, great players, and guys that have bought into this culture. Our administration's been awesome and given us the resources to be successful. And, you know, the energy's high right now. You know, I think there's a lot of confidence within our program and with our fans, alumni, students. And so it's been really exciting. We're looking forward to this next season.
You know, Seth, I expect you to say that. But if you were to go back, honestly, I mean, it may be something that surprised people outside the program. But from talking to you in the past and seeing how you run things and how you conduct yourself in your program, I know that you expected really good things to happen. How were you able, though, to see a program that was 1-11 and think this is a place where I can not only succeed, but I can do it quickly?
Well, I think it's, to me, the first thing you have to do is instill culture, and you got to have a belief and a trust factor within your coaching staff and your players. You got to build those relationships, and everybody has to be on the same page, understanding what your core values are, what your culture is going to be. And I think the quicker you can get there and pulling the rope in the same direction, the better success you're going to have. Did I think it would happen as quick as it did? No, I don't know. You know, I never really thought about how long it would take to get that culture to set in, but you know, our kids, since we've been here, we've had those relationships. I told those guys when I walked in the locker room, you know, I've been in a very similar situation in college. You know, when Coach Stoops came in 1999, my first 2 years with John Blake, and my last 2 years were with Bob Stoops. And so I'd sit in their chairs and understood that, you know, look, I may not have recruited you, but you're now a part of my family, and we're going to, you know, this is who we are, this is what we're about, and we're all going to win together. And so I think just building those relationships early, the kids were unbelievable and buying into what we were trying to get accomplished. And, you know, for the most part, I think we were all, you know, trying to pull the rope in the same direction. I think if within any program, if you can do that, you can have success.
Yeah, right, Seth. I'm not sure that I talk to any coach in any program in any sport right now that does not mention culture and almost right off the top like you did. So when you're talking about core values and your culture, can you give me a sense? What is it where you are right? In fact, wherever you are, what is your core values and what is the culture you're looking to instill?
Yeah, when we came in here, you know, we talked every single day, and I told them they may get sick of it, but you're going to hear it every single day. I don't have 10 or 15, 20 different things around our program or sayings that about who we are. You know, we talk about, you know, being selfless teammates, making sure that we always take strain off our teammate. And you can do that in a lot of different ways. Some of it's just knowing and understanding what your job is and making sure you're doing your job to not put extra strain on your teammate. Sometimes it's giving them a helping hand, understanding off-field issues, you know, how it affects your entire program. So just being a selfless teammate is going to be huge in our program. The second thing we talk about is being mentally and physically tough. You know, I think a lot of this game is about mental toughness, you know, being able to overcome adversity with a great attitude. And you're going to face adversity in every single game. You're going to face adversity throughout the week in your classrooms and study hall. With your nutrition, with your family and the community, and we got to be mentally tough enough to make sure that we overcome any kind of adversity together with a great attitude, because I believe in if you can overcome adversity quicker than the other team, you know, you're going to be able to have success. And then you have to be disciplined. You have to do your job. When we talk about discipline is do what you say you're going to do. You know, if we say we're going to get to class, let's get to class. If we say we're going to be great in the community, let's do that. And that's what we really stress as coaching staff. And the one thing that I've always told them since day one, look, I'm not going to ask you all to do anything I'm not willing to do myself. And it starts with myself, and I got to hold myself accountable to these core values. And then it goes to our assistant coaches, and then we're going to ask you to do those same things. So Look, our coaching staff works for a reason. It's not because we like it. It's not because we enjoy going down there and working out. But if we're going to ask our players to go down there and strain and work out and grind and do the things off the field that's necessary to make sure we have success on the field, then we need to be able to do that as a coaching staff as well.
Man, I love that answer. I love everything about that answer, and especially that last part. Seth Luttrell is my guest. And the reason for that is, I know you're not going to make it about you, but you kind of touched on this. You're not going to ask them to do anything that you and your staff wouldn't do yourself. To that point, Seth, Bruce Feldman conducted a poll last year. The question was, quote, if all the head coaches in college football got into a brawl, who do you think would be the last man standing? He reached out to more than 30 coaches, and you were the clear-cut winner. Some coaches said things like, Seth is scary. He used to hurt people in football and wrestling. Another said, quote, state champion wrestler, fullback at OU. He would kick all their ass. I'd bet on it, end quote. What is your reaction when you hear that stuff?
I must have had a lot of people fooled, one. And two, I'm glad I don't have to back up that article. I don't want to have to get in these brawls. There's some pretty tough coaches out there that, it would probably be a lot very painful matches because I'll tell you what, it's not something you want to have to do. But I'll tell you, I appreciate those remarks from a lot of great coaches, and, it's a great honor. But at the same time, I'm glad I don't have to back it up.
Now, of course, the message, you're not doing it for that. The message being, again, we're not asking you guys to do anything we're not doing ourselves. And then you've got that Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback that I mentioned, Mason Fine, somebody who is becoming more and more well-known to college football fans. He's thrown for more yards than any quarterback the last two seasons. He's won two straight Conference USA Player of the Year awards. How much has he grown as a player and a leader since he first arrived on campus?
He's been unbelievable, and that's just something that, I've always known he's had it in him. You know, he's always came in with that chip on his shoulder. You know, he's been a guy that, I was kind of in a very similar situation, and there was a lot of people that told me I wouldn't be able to, play high school football or play at the next level at running back, or I was never big enough, fast enough, or strong enough, and that's, the chip he had on his shoulder. You know, he's always trying to prove people wrong. He's always had that chip and confidence in himself, knowing that if he puts the work in and the time, that he's going to go out there and compete. And I know that when he came here, he just had something about him that he could draw his teammates to him. They all gather around him. They push for him. They pull for him just because of the type of teammate he is. Everything he does is a sacrifice for his team. I can promise you that he's had a ton of records, but he's very humble. I think later on down the road, he'll really enjoy some of these things that he's done throughout his college career. But as of right now, the one thing on his mind is helping this team win a championship. And, that's just who he is, and that's what he works for. And he's really developed, it's amazing how much he's grown just in this offseason. It's great to see things through a different pair of lens. With Coach Harrell did a great job with Mason over the first 3 years, and he learned a lot of ball, and he learned our system. But at times, Coach Harrell had a great opportunity to move on and get to USC, and we hired another unbelievable offensive coordinator, Bodie Reeder, and just being able to sit in with him and see it through a different perspective. I think he's continuing to learn. I think he had a great offseason, and I'm really looking forward to watching him play this season.
Seth Luttrell, my guest. Well, you mentioned opportunities to move on, so of course I got to follow you up there. Because of the success you've had, your name comes up for jobs at bigger programs. So, there are bigger jobs, but is bigger necessarily better? And what makes the fit that you have right now where you are so good?
I think the biggest thing with anything is making sure that whatever program you're involved in, is they're going to give you the resources necessary to be successful. I think that's huge, not only with your coaching staff, but with your players, making sure that they're doing everything necessary off the field with nutrition, making sure your strength staff, your academic support, just all the different things that it takes in order for you to be successful on the field, off the field, in recruiting, getting great players here. And then, when we're talking to families, making sure that, when we tell them something, we're going to follow through with it. And I know Ren Baker, our athletic director, he gives us that support, and he's been nothing but unbelievable. Beck and I, we're close to home. We love it. We love this community. This university has been unbelievable from top to bottom, from the president to our administration, to our players, to our fans, to our alumni. We're very happy here, and so we're in a great spot. It's a place that, I think you can compete for championships on a yearly basis with our support that we have, and ultimately that's what you're looking for. Can you go somewhere where you can compete and win championships? And I think this is a place you can do it.
Seth Luttrell, my guest. One last thought. 4 years in, you have been stacking. I mean, stacking recruiting classes. How does that depth chart feel now versus when you first arrived?
It's definitely deeper, and it definitely needed to be. I think our coaches have really done a great job of building the relationships. That's one thing that I knew coming in, you know, just making sure that in these four counties, just in this DFW area, we had to make sure we went out, and it wasn't about how many schools we could hit. It's about how many relationships you can gather within that school and that community, and it takes trust. And, you know, I know these coaches around here, they want to know that, you know, wherever they're sending their kids, that they're going to be well taken care of. We're going to be great mentors for them. We're going to take good care of them. And I think we've built that trust up. And so over the years, you know, the more you get in and know different people and, recruiting, definitely it's a grind throughout the year. But at least you know going into schools now, coaches come here and they trust what you're doing within your program. And that's what you're looking for.
Well, that's certainly something you've been building. Seth Luttrell, the head football coach at North Texas. He's entering his fourth season. And again, coming off back-to-back 9-win seasons. That had not happened in four decades. They open up against Abilene Christian on Saturday. Seth, really appreciate you and the conversation. Great to have you back. Thanks so much and good luck.
Jim, I really appreciate you. Thanks for having me on.
Good night.